Thank you, everyone, for the really warm reception today, for the Burkhart father-son team in making sure that I'm all set. And I appreciate everyone showing up today, knowing that Pastor Tim wasn't going to be here. So I was like, wasn't sure what it was going to be like this morning. And before I dive in a little bit about myself, as you know, my name is Joanne Hansen. I have lived on the Eastern Shore for about 9 years. I have two children. We're looking for the PowerPoint. You get to see pictures. Go one more. There we go. I have two children, two boys. I have a 27-year-old son and a 19-year-old son, and I have a rescue dog that is sporting Habitat logo items there and a rescue cat. And we live in Cambridge, Maryland. I've lived there for about 9 years. I love music. I love to read. I love gardening in the yard. And I currently serve as the executive director for Habitat for Humanity, Chop Tank, and I've been there for about 4 years. Do we have any volunteers in the... Anybody familiar or ever volunteered with Habitat before? Some of you, you, hold them up, wave them high and proud, yeah. So for those of you maybe who aren't so familiar, we have a little video that we're going to share with you. I think that gives you a really good understanding of what Habitat does in our community.
What does it look like when a life is truly changed?
I feel a sense of accomplishment because I built a house. This house has brought us financial independence.
It's a great place to raise a family.
When I look back where we've come from to where we are today, it makes my heart very happy.
This house means all of us together.
So.
Every family dreams to have their own house. This house changed our lives.
Habitat for Humanity is at work in your community and around the world. Through shelter, we empower.
So a little bit more about Habitat Chop Tank. We are a nonprofit organization. We were founded in 1992, so this year we celebrate 30 years, which is really exciting for us. And we serve both Talbot and Dorchester counties. Our mission is to work in partnership with God and all people to build homes, to build community, and probably most importantly, to build hope. What you might not know about Habitat for Humanity is that we are a faith-based organization. We put God first in everything that we do. And one of the things that's really important to us is the principle of tithing. Habitat Chop Tank tithes 10% of all of the unrestricted money that we raise. And we have tithe partners around the world in El Salvador, in Haiti, and in Guatemala. And this last year, we received the Malachi 310 Award, which is having reached a total tithe of $500,000 in service to those countries. And it was astounding. We were on a call last week with some folks from Guatemala. $4,000 can build a house in Guatemala. So imagine what $500,000 has been doing. Our programs are all based on the values of sweat equity and repayment. So people help to either build their home or make a repair on their home, and they also either purchase their brand new home or they repay a loan on their to repair their home. So if you go back one, right there, that is actually Brooks Lane in St. Michael's. And so we just completed building or finishing our seventh house on Brooks Lane in St. Michael's. There are six families that are living there. We're really excited about that. If you have a chance, drive by and take a look, because it's really changed that neighborhood, but more importantly, it's changed lives. In addition to building new homes, we launched a new program about 2 years ago that you also may not know about. It is our repair program. And so we realized a long time ago that going in and building new houses here and there really wasn't having a difference in the neighborhood that we really wanted it to make. So we created a revolving loan fund for homeowners in the neighborhoods where we're building. And many of those neighborhoods are older neighborhoods. They're distressed. There's a lot of poverty. The houses are aging. The owners don't have access to credit. And so this revolving loan fund is based on a sliding fee scale based on their income. So they can borrow at 0% interest to make loans that we help them on with our either contractors or our volunteers. And that program's been running now for about 2 years. Everything that we did, I remember when I was that age. Everything that we do, whether it's building new homes or repairing homes, it's really based on a foundation of education and financial counseling. And so a lot of the volunteers that we rely on in the community are not just volunteers who swing a hammer. They're volunteers who come along and they partner with our families, they provide emotional support, they provide information, and they provide some of that counseling. This year, we will reach building our 100th house, and as I mentioned before, it's our 30th year anniversary. Now we can go to the next slide. As much as I love to share the work that Habitat is doing to provide safety and shelter to families in our community, when I asked Pastor Tim what he wanted me to talk about today, he said, you know what, just be authentic. And so that is what I'm going to try and do with you today, and I want to share with you some of my personal testimony of what God's promise of shelter has meant in my life. I have moved a total of 15 times since having my first son, and he's 27 years old now, so you can do the math on that. I can tell you that shelter was frequently on my mind as a single mom with two kids. And you might ask yourself, well, why so many times? And I would say to you, we don't have time to talk about that today. So we're going to get right to the heart of it. I'm going to share with you a time, one of those times, though that was back in 2005. And I had just rededicated my life to Christ. And my sons were 10 and 3. And I just had this overwhelming desire to please the Lord, to live a lifestyle that was pleasing to Him, to provide a safe environment for my children. And I knew that where I was, He needed me to leave. And so I started looking, and I couldn't find anything. I was getting really discouraged, and there was a woman, an older, mature, more seasoned woman at church who came up to me, and she said, you know, you're going to know the place that God has for you when you walk in those doors. And that was the encouragement that I needed. And I'm so grateful to be in an environment here that feels like family, and I see that. I've experienced that myself today. So those words of encouragement that you don't know when you speak them to someone, what difference they make in their life, those words of encouragement made all the difference to me. Well, a couple days after that, I had been scanning the papers, and I came across an ad. It was a listing for a home for rent, and it was not too far from the daycare, not too far from the school, not too far from where I worked, and it was at the top of my price range, but I thought, oh, Lord, this must be it. Those prophetic words that were spoken, I'm trusting you, this must be it. And so I drove to see the home, met the listing agent there, and it looked okay from the outside. And I went inside, and I can tell you that it was nothing short of heartbreak. So the pet urine and dander and smell was overwhelming. I think the previous renters, tenants, had also been cigarette smokers, so you could smell that, but everything had that yellow look. The floors and the carpets were stained. The kitchen cabinets were like hanging off by a hinge. I think the appliances were white, but they were a lovely rust color because they were covered in rust. And the listing agent said, and oh, by the way, they need you to also take care of the grass. And so I was like, okay. So I said, can I have a few minutes? And he excused himself. He gave me a few minutes. And I sat down. I can remember sitting down on the stairs in that house and just crying and saying, Lord, okay, if this is what you have for me, it's okay, because I know you're in it. And I know you'll be with me. I can clean, I can paint, I can fix it up, it'll all be good. Now remember, I'm a single mom with a 10-year-old and a 3-year-old, and I work full-time. But I promised the listing agent that I would get back to him, and I got in my car and started to drive away, and my phone rang. And it was a realtor who said, hey, I've been looking for you, something just came on the market, can you meet me there? And I was like, well, yeah, I'm in my car, I'm on my way back to work. I said, well, tell me about it on my way there. She gave me the address. It was in a neighborhood closer to the daycare, closer to the school, closer to where I work, and much more affordable. So I was a little, you know, cautious when I pulled up, given the last experience. And the outside looked fine. It was actually right across the street from a park. And again, I had a 10-year-old and a 3-year-old, both boys. And I walked in, and it was exactly as my friend had described to me. It wasn't any place fancy, but it was the place that God had for us to give us safety, to give us shelter, to give us his presence. Because it was the place where we would start that journey in relationship with him and a journey of healing. So I want to share with you, if you could go back one slide. There we go. Some of the things that I sort of jotted down a list of things about what has been important in my life in terms of shelter. So obviously there's the physical shelter, which is a place of safety and protection from nature's elements and dangerous people or situations. The second thing is that safety, that feeling of safety and security and peace and stability. And the third thing is a space where relationships can grow. And that is why God brought me to that place, because he was drawing me to his heart, where I could develop that intimate relationship with him. As I was preparing for today, I looked up the words shelter and refuge in the concordance of my Bible. And outside of Psalm 91, which we're gonna dig into just a little in just a minute, I found 20 scriptures in the Old Testament that mention God's promise of shelter and refuge. And I'm going to read just a few of those to you. The first one is in Deuteronomy 33:27. The eternal God is your refuge, and underneath are the everlasting arms. 2 Samuel 22:3-4. The Lord is my rock, my fortress, and my deliverer. My God is my rock in whom I take refuge, my shield and the horn of my salvation. He is my stronghold, my refuge, and my savior. From violent men, you save me. Psalms 9:9. The Lord is a refuge for the oppressed, a stronghold in times of trouble. Psalms 27:5. For in the day of trouble, he will keep me safe in his dwelling. He will hide me in the shelter of his sacred tent and set me high upon a rock. Continuing on in the Psalms 36:7, how priceless is your unfailing love. Both high and low among men find refuge in the shadow of your wings. Psalms 46:1, God is our refuge and strength and ever-present help in time of trouble. And then There are even more Psalms. And if you'd like a copy of those, please just let Pastor Tim know, and I would be happy to give you a listing of all of those promises of shelter. And now we're going to look a little bit closer at Psalm 91, 1 and 2, 9 and 10. This is where God talks about his promise of shelter and protection. And I'm going to read this to you. Psalm 91, 1 and 2. He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say to the Lord, my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust, if you make the Most High your dwelling, even the Lord who is my refuge, then no harm will befall you, no disaster will come near your tent. And so I think the thing that struck me in these verses is that, you know, we really have a choice to make. He who dwells means we have a choice. We have a choice to dwell or not to dwell. He who says, we have a choice to say or not to say. If you make. They all indicate that we have a choice in order to abide in the shadow of the Almighty and claim the protection of his refuge and fortress, to trust that no harm will befall us. So the question I pose to you today is, will we choose to dwell in his presence? Will we make him a priority? Will we choose to say that he is our refuge and our fortress, even when it doesn't feel like it? Will we profess his goodness when times haven't been so good? And will we choose to make him our dwelling and trust him no matter what? We've all been watching and hearing reports of Russia invade Ukraine, and I happened to be watching on YouTube a worship service in the United States that was being led by a young Ukrainian woman, and she was sharing that she had been in touch with her family, and they had shared with her that as the Russians were invading, there were Ukrainian people that were kneeling on the ground with outstretched hands in front of the tanks and stopping those tanks. And the question that she posed to everyone was this: are we ready with our bare hands, with no physical weapons, to get on our knees and come against whatever mountain is in our lives? To have courage, to be brave, to trust that the Lord is with us, that he is greater than the one who is in the world, that he is faithful to his word, that he is our shelter, he is our fortress, he is our deliverer. I know in my own life I've struggled with trusting God's promises. About 8 years ago, my oldest son was diagnosed with a very severe mental illness. And for the last 3 years, I've watched him slip further and further away. Sometimes he doesn't recognize me. He doesn't remember the life that we had together. And it's really been a vicious cycle of overwhelming grief and sadness and anger and crying out to the Lord, why don't you heal him? I know you can. Why don't you? And this summer I mentioned to you, I like to do work in my yard. So I was out in the yard and I was down on my knees and I was digging in the dirt and I was sobbing. And I was like, Lord, just speak to me. Can you just speak to me? Can you just be real to me? Can I feel your presence? And I looked up in the sky, and at that moment, there was a jet plane flying over the head. And I heard in my spirit the word perspective. He said, you see that plane as flying at a low speed. But that plane is flying at a very high speed, but just the right speed that it needs to fly at. I want you to trust me. I'm in control. I was so overwhelmed. I was overwhelmed first because, you know, the God of the universe, he spoke to me, right? But I was even more overwhelmed of his reassurance to trust him, that he's in control. And I'm sure all of you can probably relate to something in your own life today. If we go on to Psalm 91, 14 through 16, I'm going to read this to you. Because he loves me, says the Lord, I will rescue him. I will protect him, for he acknowledges my name. He will call upon me, and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honor him. With long life, I will satisfy him and show him my salvation. But once again, these verses indicate that we have a choice to make. We must choose to love him, and we must choose to call upon him. When we do, he promises to rescue us, to protect us, to answer us, to be with us, to honor us, to satisfy us, and to show us his salvation. And the only way to really, I've found, to truly believe those words is to experience them. And the only way we can experience them is if we're close enough to him to know his heart. My oldest son that I mentioned to you a few minutes ago, when he was 21, he gave his heart to Jesus. And that's been something I've struggled with for a long time, because I may not be able to be with him on this earth, but I want to be with him in eternity. And when he was 21, so this is about 6 years ago, if the math is right, and he had gotten out of the hospital, and he was following the doctor's orders for his care, and a young man, a little bit older than he was, had taken him under his wing, and was taking him to church, and had taken him to visit a man in the community who was well-known. It was a Christian and a missionary. And he led Vincent to give his heart to Jesus. And I got this phone call from a 21-year-old young man surrounded by a few other men his age who calls me. He's sobbing. He's like, Mom, I got something really important to tell you. And I wasn't sure what to expect, because my son's calling me on the phone and he's crying. I was like, oh no, what is it? And he said, I gave my heart to Jesus. And Mr. Reese wanted me to call you and tell you. I didn't fully understand God's goodness to me at that time, and how much meaning that would have for me today. But he knew back then where my family would be today. And I can't tell you how many times that I have drawn strength from that experience. And I'll share one other one with you. When I moved into that house that God had for me back in 2005, he gave me this picture of him carrying me in his arms up a hill, and I felt so safe and so secure and so loved, and all of a sudden I was like, oh no, where are my children? Where are my children? And he said, look over my shoulder. And there they both were, sitting Indian style on the hem of his garment, telling me once again, I've got you. I'm in control. Being in relationship with him ensures that we don't miss those ways that he uniquely speaks to us, but back to what those verses indicate. They indicate that we must first choose to dwell. We must first choose to say. We must first choose to make him our shelter and make him our dwelling place. Now that image that I shared with you of God carrying me in his arms and up a hill and my boys riding on the hem of his garment, you know, you might say, well, that's a lovely image. That's really nice. But how do you know that's from the Lord? How do you know that's not just something that you kind of made up? And I honestly used to ask myself or question myself as well. But I can tell you today, 17 years later, with confidence that God knew back then when he gave me that picture, he knew where I would be today. He knew that I was going to need to know that he was with me up that hill, that he was caring for my boys. Because you see, he's the Alpha and Omega. He knows the beginning from the end and the end from the beginning. He knows every hair on my head. He knows every tear that I've cried. He knows what ticks me off. He knows what brings me joy. He's jealous of me. Sometimes he wakes me up in the middle of the night just so he can spend time with me. He knows the desires of my heart, and he longs to give those to me. He's my creator. He's my friend. He's my protector. He's my provider. He's my shelter from the storm, my fortress, my hiding place. I know him, and I love him because he first loved me. And he knows my love for my children because he made me that way. And I get a little agitated with myself. Maybe that's the right word. How much like the Israelites am I? How many times has he proven to me and spoken to me and shown me that he's in control and he's got it, even though it doesn't look like what I think it should look like? And so in, you know, Numbers chapter 13, if you have a chance to read that sometime this week, I would encourage you to do that. In Numbers chapter 13, the Lord said to Moses in verse 1, "Send some men to explore the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the Israelites." So did you know that God had already confirmed his promised land of Canaan to his children, the Israelites, 55 times, and he'd actually even said it 12 times in a covenant. Can you imagine? He even delivered them from slavery. He guided them with a pillar of fire by day and a cloud of smoke by night, or the other way around. He parted the Red Sea. He gave them manna from heaven. He promised to deliver them into the land of Canaan, the land of milk and honey. And even after all of that, their giant, big old giant of unbelief stood in the way. So as I was, again, working on what I was going to say today, because I don't consider this a sermon. I'm not a philosopher. I'm not well read. In fact, I'm in year two of reading the Bible all the way through. So folks, it's a journey. Don't give up. But what gets in the way of our ability to trust in his promises? I can only tell you this. The closer I am to the Lord and to his heart, the more that I believe he is for me, not against me, that he is a loving father and he wants the best for his children. Although his best probably isn't what I would picture as being my best. He's growing me, he's shaping me, he's teaching me in his ways that are so much higher, I can't understand them. And when I choose to dwell in his presence, when I choose to say that he's my fortress and my God and my refuge, I'm not ashamed. When I make him a priority, I draw closer to his heart, And I trust that his promises are true. That woman that I mentioned to you years ago who encouraged me and told me that I would know the place that God had for me when I got there, she also is the one who referred me to a book called Believing God. It's a book that's written by Beth Moore, and I would encourage each of you, if you ever get discouraged, if those voices of shame and fear and doubt become overwhelming, it's a great book, and it was a practice that regularly I had to start using to get my mind and my heart in a posture where I could believe. So these are things I used to say every day. Every time those voices of doubt and shame and unbelief would come in, I would say these things. I believe God is who he says he is. I believe God can do what he says he can do. I believe that I am who God says I am. I believe I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And I believe God's work is alive and active in me. I'll close with one final thought. And it's based on a scripture found in Romans 8:28 that I hold near and dear to my heart. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. I used to be crushed by a weight of hopelessness and despair. And I never thought it would be possible that I could find joy in the midst of that. But I believe, because I know his heart, and because he knows mine, that he's working in both of my boys' lives in ways that I can't see, in ways that I can't understand. And I can only tell you that I trust him because I know him and because he knows me. He is a good father. I didn't think I could say that even a year ago, and thank God I'm not where I was 10 years ago or 5 years ago or a year ago, but he is a good, good Father. And if you don't know that today, I would just encourage you to draw close to his heart, because that's what he longs for. So I'm going to close and thank you all for listening and allowing me to share some of my story with you. And I'll be around after service if anybody has other questions about Habitat or anything else. So thank you.